things seem just out of your reach. Faces and places seem strange and they unsteady your feet.
Welcome back. This is Richard Sachs. I'm your host on Lost Arts Radio. And I wanted to introduce today's topic by just reminding you that we've had our friend Bill Warner on quite a few times, and he's essentially done a series of all different topics relating to the belief system that's called Islam. And I want to kind of give you the context that we appreciate everybody as human beings, and it doesn't matter what belief system they have. And I see them myself and everybody else as pure spirit, actually. And so I'm about as far from anybody who would discriminate against any group or condemn anybody as possible. I don't even care if you're from this planet. I'm completely open to you, and I see everybody as really the same family and the same being. But belief systems are another question. And throughout history, going way back before recorded history that we have now, there have been belief systems that teach people to hurt each other and to kill other groups. And they say, our group is the only real human group. Everybody else is subhuman. And so you can do whatever you want to them. You can mislead and kill them and rape them and invade them and the usual stuff. And it's been pretty bad, at least in what I consider recent history, the last 10 or 20,000 years. And this has been going on all over the place. Not just now, but all different groups following the same thing, that they have a picture of God as somebody that hates everybody but them and justifies all kinds of atrocities. That's going on a lot now in the belief system, which is called Islam, and I've read all their scriptures, and there's three major ones that we've talked about, and they say it's okay to do pretty much anything you want to anybody that's not a believer of your religion, which is the Islam that we're talking about, and God's going to be really happy with you, especially if you die in the process of trying to convert or kill people that won't convert, and you're going to end up in paradise that way. And I think that's a pretty destructive belief system, as you can see, and hundreds of millions of people have died in the last 600 or 700 years as a result. So we have had guests on besides Bill Warner, a couple of women that have been born into that system and escaped, but we've never really had anybody that has voluntarily joined that belief system, which anyone can, and in fact, the leaders of Islam want everybody to join. Or you can die or become a demiurge, slave, or whatever you want, but it's your choice. But we've never had anybody that voluntarily joined it and then found out later what happened. And we have a chance for that today, which I thought was very fortunate, and really grateful for Raquel Levin to come on the show today as a woman who was a non-Muslim. And we'll hear her history a little bit and what happened with her during the adventures after that, after she joined. So she's going to tell us what it was like, why she joined up, and what her history was, and what set her up to be interested in doing that, and results of it, and whatever she wants to share for maybe all of our interests, but especially women that are thinking of doing the same thing that she did, and what her feedback is about the real choices involved. So welcome, Raquel. I'm really glad you're here. Thanks for the time, and I appreciate your being here. Thank you.
It's good to be here.
Where I'd like to kind of start is going back before all this happened. I always like to bring everybody into the conversation, not just people familiar with the topic, So I thought, if you want to say something about your earlier life and what you think made it interesting for you that you wanted to make this conversion, and what led up to that, basically, and then we'll go from there.
Sure, yeah, there's a whole lot of history. There's so much to it, it's difficult to get into all of it, but I can just give you some of the basics of my life and what brought me to deciding to convert to Islam.
Yeah, and remember, you've got basically two audiences. One is the general public that really just wants to understand what's going on with the belief system and what you learned about it from the inside. But the other, within that audience, there's a specific audience, and I don't know how big it is. It might just be a few people or more, of women that are in situations like you were, that are right on the verge of deciding what to do. So with those two groups in mind, whatever you want to share would be great.
Well, for me, I had a very abusive childhood. So I think that's, it all starts with the beginning of just, I went through quite a bit of sexual abuse. Physical abuse and psychological abuse. And I think that made me vulnerable, because throughout my life I was making poor decisions with, creating poor relationships, I had all the wrong friends at the time I was thinking of Islam. I thought they were good friends, but just having people in my life who truly didn't really care about me and were even just friends who were abusive on an emotional level. So I really came from a point of really, there was no real support except one clergy that I'd known, because I practiced the Jewish faith. That was basically, I was a single mother. I had escaped abuse from their dad was abusive. And so I had escaped, in a sense, I was kind of running from him. Mm-hmm. But I was able to get away and protect my daughters. So I was already coming from an abusive situation. And at the time I was in college, I was trying to finish a psychology degree, and I was very stressed from raising my girls on my own. I had two girls. They were about 8 and 9 at the time.
Okay.
So I was in a place where a lot of abuse memories were coming back to me in a college that I didn't really like, and I just gotten out of an abusive relationship with another person who was not physically abusive but emotionally abusive. So I guess you could say I was really down and depressed. And I often would, in a sense, I always hated myself within. So it was also difficult for me to be a mother at the time. So I guess trying to get through college and then going through a really difficult time with relationships. And I was a practicing Jew at the time. At that time, I also thought I was Native American, which I found out that I'm not. I'm actually Irish.
Kelly, you've got some kind of background noise. Oh, it just went down, I think. It sounds like a vacuum cleaner or something.
That's just my computer.
Okay. Maybe it's a computer that also does vacuuming if you need it, but that's okay. I can still hear you.
Yeah, so... it was just at a difficult time in my life, and I was trying to get through school, raising my daughters, I also had complex PTSD. And I guess I just was a little discouraged with my Jewish faith, felt something was missing within it. And then I felt like I wasn't really accepted with the Native American faith, because I guess I always thought of it as Native. It was also just a problem with identity, not knowing who I was.
What made you think you were Native American? Did you think you just looked like you would be?
Well, people would always say, some people within my family would say, you have some Native American.
Okay.
And then people would say, well, you look, oh, you definitely, like, I had a Native American teacher who would say, you definitely are, you really look Native American.
Okay. All right, so you were saying that you thought you were Native American, and then you found out that wasn't accurate.
Well,
right?
I mean, I just found out about 7 or 8 months ago. But at the time, I guess I just felt like I didn't really feel connected with, within a community, and I felt discouraged. And then, with everything going on, I then spoke to a person online about Islam, and I was very vulnerable. It was like in 2007. When people were starting to talk online a lot, and I really was kind of, I was so very lonely within, I suppose. And so I started talking to a man online, and he would tell me all about Islam.
Were you in your 20s at that point?
Well, I don't really like to say my age. I'd say okay. I'm middle-aged now, but age is just a very sensitive topic for me.
Yeah, okay, that's okay. It doesn't matter. You weren't very old anyway.
I wouldn't say I was really young, I would say. Yeah. I was like going to college late, because when I was younger, I wasn't able to.
Okay.
Late, you know, going to college at a later stage, trying to get my life together.
So you were looking online for people that could give you clues about what to do, I guess, right?
Yeah, well, I was just looking. I knew I was looking for something within, some mm-hmm. kind of, and, you know, especially because there was a lot of rhetoric in college about how awful America is, and
mm-hmm.
how people
right.
discuss, like, how awful, you know, we live in an evil society, and I just felt really disconnected from it and thought, well, maybe I should try somewhere else. This is, you know.
Sure.
I don't know. You know, I just felt very disconnected, and I, you know, just... So I talked to this person, and he just started telling me all about how wonderful Islam is and that I should read the Quran. And, you know, he would explain to me that it's a beautiful religion and faith. And yeah. I said, you know, I was just very vulnerable. So, like, I just, and he, you know, and he just romanticized Islam a lot. And so it just seemed like, well, this sounds like a different, like, spiritual. You know, religion, maybe, you know, what he's saying, you know, is there's a lot of truth to it. And so I was just mm-hmm. drawn into the, you know, into these long talks about it with him. So then I went to the library myself. I got the Quran and started reading different books on Islam. And I guess at the time when I started reading it, I was reading more, there's different surahs. There's Meccan surahs, which are tend to, you know, they come across as much more gentle and peaceful.
Right.
If you just read the Meccan surahs, you might think, oh, this is a peaceful religion. But uh-huh. then when I would read them, and then I read the Medina surahs, but I think what I would, like, there was the one surah, you know, surah 434, Nisa, which talks about, you know, the man is able to hit his wife. I think I was really shocked by it. And a part of me was just saying, well, this is really horrible. I mean, how can I join a religion like this? But I thought it was, I just assumed somehow that it was similar to the Bible or the Torah in the Jewish religion, just thinking, right. Oh, well, it's not really real. It's just, it's not meant to be read literally. Like, we don't read the Bible or literally. There's many verses in there even of stuff that Jews, so the Jewish religion has been reformed. So I just thought, well, this is probably the way it is. They don't take these verses seriously. Because deep down, sometimes when you really want to look at, you want to find something, you just, I guess I was willing to bypass all the negative and the horrible verses that I was reading. So I just looked at the good ones. And that's when I said the Shahada with this person online, which is, it was in 2007, I think September. Yeah. And then, you know, without really, I should have really done a whole lot more of research, but he would try to convince me that as a Jew, I would die and go to hell immediately. And that if I didn't, you know, accept just Islam, and then if something that maybe, you know, that all non-Muslims would go to hell. And I really knew, like, intellectually, and I knew deep inside myself that's not true, but sometimes I guess it's just easily to be manipulated and to think sure. It's true. So then I accepted Islam.
Yeah. When you say the Shahada, why don't you explain to people what that means?
Well, basically, it's really simple to become a Muslim, almost too simple. You say that you accept that Allah that Islam is the only religion, and Allah is the only God, and that Prophet Muhammad is his messenger. And that's what it is, and you're a Muslim. I mean, it's really simple.
Yeah, so this is not anything to do with race at all, is it?
No, I mean, a lot of people really assume that Islam is a race because many brown and black people come from the Muslim countries of North Africa, and
uh-huh.
you know, there's many, many people that are, you know, they're people of color.
Right.
But it's not, because actually in Turkey, where I live, many people are actually white, and they're Muslim. Uh-huh. Many white, many friends that we had, so Turkish people are actually, there are... people that are of color, but they're people that aren't, and many people convert. Many, many people convert to Islam.
Right.
That's a real strong misunderstanding that people, that's why I think that the left oftentimes, you know, is so, you know, pro-Islam.
Wait, you're saying, I didn't follow you, you're saying that's the reason that they're pro-Islam?
Well, a lot of what's called progressive people, I wouldn't consider myself right or left, but what's called the democratic, more left,
right,
believe, like, you have feminists who will fight for Muslims, and they really feel that you know, they're, that, you know, they, you can't say anything bad about Islam because they think of it as a race, as you were just saying.
Yeah, exactly.
But it's not. It's a religion and ideology.
So what do you think attracted you the most?
Well, it seemed like it would be more like, I guess, I think for me, just the idea of having a family. I mean, I
always, yeah.
And in America, a lot of times people are isolated, and I was isolated. Of course, it was, you know, kind of my own doing, because, I mean, we can always go out and meet people and find social groups, but I think just feeling like I didn't really belong, I felt like I was still white, and I didn't like that, and I hated myself for that. I didn't know.
You hated yourself because of what race you were?
Yeah, I did, because I felt like I really was drawn to the Native American religion, but I really wasn't accepted fully in that. And then in the Jewish religion, because I'm part Jewish, because I'm actually also, which I didn't know then, as Irish.
Okay.
And English. I kind of felt like they didn't accept me either when they would say, oh, you don't look Jewish, or you're just not accepted. You know, so I mean, in some sense, like Islam, it was like, oh, well, you know, you'll be accepted and everybody will love you and respect you. And, you know, and this man would tell me that people would, you know, that we're like one big family. And so for me, it was just that vulnerability, the isolation I was feeling, the disgust, I guess, with, in some sense, I was more conservative, and the college I was in, there was just a lot of things that really I was discouraged by seeing. And so maybe Islam seemed like a pure faith, or
sure,
a way that people could, like, have real true values. But, I mean, it was, I guess deep inside, too, with all the sexual abuse I had gone through, I thought this was a way sort of to compensate. I felt deeply horrible inside. I thought I was bad and that I was the cause of the sexual abuse. So somehow just putting the hijab, which is a headscarf, over yourself and covering up, seemed like maybe somehow inside that would make me pure.
Right.
What I was looking for, was purity. But it's really, I was really it was a misconception. And with everything that was going on in my life, I guess, it was kind of like looking for utopia, which they say a lot of people do look for that. And within Islam, it appears like a utopia in a sense.
Oh, yeah. Well, you're specifically promised that you're going to get to go to paradise, right?
Yeah, and that, you know, my husband, I mean, well, he became my husband later, but this man would tell me things like, you know, oh, Islamic women, they are pure, and they're all the bad things in the world, you know, and women, you know, are with all the sexual, impurity, you know, people acting out and being... you know, everything going on in the world, Islamic women are going to have a real future in heaven, and you can have a great, you know, he would explain to me that, you know, he wanted me to come to Turkey, and that, you know, he would be treating me so wonderfully, and that we would have a real marriage.
Right, and so when you met him online, did you know that he was in Turkey and you were in America?
Oh yeah, he would explain, and he explained that he was actually a non-practicing Muslim, but he was coming back to it, and he had said that, you know, he would give so much to my daughters, and it was, I guess I was, now that I think about it, I feel really like, how could I be so, manipulated, and it feels really stupid, but I guess sometimes, you know, like, and then my intuition, this is the biggest thing that I've learned from it, is my intuition was telling me that something was really wrong with him. And I even had a bad dream, and it was like, this guy is a real, you know, lecherous, terrible person. Don't go to Turkey. But I didn't listen to it. And it's when
right,
I,
right.
for me, I guess the biggest thing that I've learned is from childhood is because of the abuse I went through, I didn't listen to that intuition, which that intuition can always guide you to safety. But so that's the next thing is that we ended up, I took my daughters and we went to Turkey.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and then we stayed with a family there who were Americans, who were converts to Islam as well. We stayed with them for a while. Mm-hmm. But I guess I was just enchanted with Islam at first because their daughters just seemed so spiritual.
Right, right.
Just the way they appeared, too. There was this obscurity within this couple, their daughters, and I just kept saying, I want more of this, I want to know more, and I want to be here. At first, when we arrived in Turkey, it was like an adventure to my daughters.
Mm-hmm.
It was like, just for them, it was an adventure, but, you know, I guess at first I was enchanted with it. I just thought, oh, this is really a religious, spiritual, you know, place, and the family seemed, well, they seemed happy, but the husband was very dominating of his home. And a lot of, at this time, when I just wanted to see this new life that I was living, that I, you know, was learning about, I didn't want to see those things. But like, she had to ask him for everything.
This is the one that had converted that you were staying with, right?
Yeah, we stayed with them for a while. And, you know, and then they were, they told us, you know, that we could learn from, they were part of a group. And so we went to a mosque there, and they told us we could stay there and learn. But I felt nervous about staying with these people because I just had, I don't know, just kind of a feeling like it would be a cult. So even though they
were they from America too, or were they from Turkey?
Yeah, they actually had lived in Turkey for about, at that time, 17 years. Yeah, so.
Okay.
But then I didn't want to stay with, I ended up just, I can't go into it, but then I ended up, you know, going to the city where my husband, where this man that had told me about Islam was.
Right.
I ended up staying closer to, I ended up getting like a house apartment there, and then we eventually got married.
Mm-hmm.
And then everything went downhill from there. I mean, he became extremely emotionally abusive to my daughters and me at first. And then slowly it turned into physical abuse. And it just became a nightmare. But he was teaching us all about Islam. And I felt so, mesmerized or just, you know, wanting, I guess I thought I'd found something. It's still hard for me to understand to this day how I didn't just get us out of there. But I just, you know, we were learning. We met friends, too, another family.
Uh-huh.
And they would often just say, well, you know, it doesn't matter. You know, it's you're so lucky to have come to Turkey. This doesn't happen to people. You're so lucky to be Muslim. You're saved now. Women would say that they would just be so, like, you're saved and, you know, don't go back to America.
Yeah, no matter what bad things are happening, you're saved, so it doesn't matter, right?
Yeah, and the Turkish women also, I'm not to say they were wonderful people, they were very, very hospitable, and, you know, they help each other a lot. The people, the families get together and they would invite us. And they took my daughters in, like, we were family, too. So they were very, very kind people. But to them also, you know, it was more normal that men would beat wives in that culture. It was like, well, what did you do to deserve that? Or did you, you know, maybe you, you know, maybe you, when you came home, you know, you did something wrong or makes them so angry. And it was like going back 100 years in a sense. And then my friend, I don't want to say any names, but a friend that my girls had made and that was a friend of mine, she would just say that, you know, women are meant to serve their husbands. And,
right.
And that, you know, she would explain to me that in Islam, the woman is weaker than the man. And so, you know, that even, you know, her mother had to adjust to, you know, had to, like, not misbehave and to have to, you know, acting right and obedient. And then her, you know, then the father was much better to her. And so we were kind of in this, you know, in this environment where it's, you know, Like, I was getting hit one time, and the neighbors were walking up the stairs, because they would often come up for coffee. And,
right.
Yeah, they would more likely believe the husband's, what the husband said about me than, you know, believing that, you know, my yeah. what was happening to me was abuse.
Well, it's the idea that men are superior to women, right, and that I think legally women count for half of a man or something like that in when they're right. giving testimony or something.
Surah 434, women are, you know, it says it right there in the Quran, that men have a degree above women, and that if you fear disobedience from your wife, but first you can leave her alone, then separate the beds.
Yeah.
You can beat her. And a lot of times, you know, people say, oh, well, that just means attack with a toothbrush. But it really doesn't. It really means to hit and strike. I mean, you know, but many apologists will try to say that it doesn't really mean to beat a woman. But it does.
Yeah.
My husband would say that. He has that right. He would tell me, I have this right. And I would think, he must not be understanding Islam.
Right.
And there was also, he would tell me hadiths, many hadiths that, you know, that I had to listen to him, that I couldn't leave the house without his permission.
Yeah.
That I couldn't say no to sex mm-hmm. if I didn't feel like it.
Right.
And, you know, I would often say, I even had a friend who was like from my, had been like, a clergy, a rabbi clergy that I would speak to, and he said, well, you know, it's not Islam. Because I would talk to him about what was going on. He'd say, you know, it's culture. That isn't Islam. And so it was difficult kind of to reach out for help, although he did feel, he would tell me that you shouldn't, that it's not okay to ever beat anybody. And, you know, he would say, I think you're being emotionally abused. But at the same time, he would stand up and say, that's definitely not Islam. But And at that time, I was thinking that, you know, my husband is not a true Muslim, so he doesn't really, you know, pray all the time. And so I just would think. But it really was all the treatment of me was his upbringing and, you know, how he viewed women. At times, I would feel like I'm in a different world, because he would say things like, what did Allah make you for if it's not for cleaning a house?
Yeah.
And, you know, being a good housewife and for sexual relations. And I would say, what? You know, it was like my whole worldview. I didn't understand that. And that's what people really need to understand, is that I'm not saying anything about Muslims per se, but, you know, many people from Muslim Islamic backgrounds, they can have a completely different view of the world and perception of women. And it really is Islam. And, you know, and now I would tell that clergy, I would say it is Islam. It's not culture.
Well, it's kind of hard to separate, right? Because Islam includes the whole culture, the whole worldview, the political view. Everything is included in the religion, it seems like, right?
Yeah, in some ways, I think it's hard to separate culture from a religion or an ideology. Because I think Islam is more of an ideology. It's not just people think of a religion as, you know, your own personal faith and practicing and your belief system, you know, higher being, and a philosophy. But Islam is actually a whole political ideology. But it
right.
is, like, because Turkey had been originally a Christian religion.
Yeah.
It took over Turkey, and so it became part of that culture. But it is part right. of religion too. It's not just culture. What he meant, it's just the culture of Turkey. But I knew I knew a lot of people that were much more secular, who were much. They were easygoing and. You know, and they weren't harsh, but the people that were stricter Muslims, they did practice all these things, you know, in like Surah 434, treating women poorly.
Yeah. Well, I guess the reason that it looks like all religion to me is that the culture, the political attitude, and the idea of conquering countries and things that don't normally seem like they would be religious. To me, those are all religious, because if you do those correctly, you go to paradise. And if you get in the way of them, you could end up going to hell, which seems pretty religious to me. It's not just, you know, join this jihad because it's a political movement. If you do it right, God really is happy with you, as I understand it.
Right, yeah. If you just commit your whole life and submit to Islam, because they always, people would often say, even other convert Muslims would tell me, Islam means peace, but Islam doesn't mean peace. What it means is submission.
You're submitting. Exactly.
So you're like a slave. And I remember when my Muslim, you know, my friends in Turkey would tell me, you're a slave. And I knew that, like, deep inside there was something within me that would say, this doesn't feel right. I don't want to be a slave. Something's wrong with this. But then I would just, like, subdue that thought, because I just really thought, this is wonderful. I can't let go of this. But it kept me in a prison. And it's true. It's like they would say to me, you know, all non-Muslims are going to hell.
Yeah.
And then I would say, and, you know, they would tell my daughters, like, Jewish people will go to hell, and the Jewish people are the worst, you know. And I would...
Well, Christians are pretty bad, too, aren't they?
The Christians, and then they would say, like, even, you know, like, any people of any other religion, like Native Americans, and they would say would go to hell. And I would say, what if they're good people? That doesn't, you know, my friend would just say you have to be a Muslim, which, you know, never made sense to me, but I just started accepting that.
Well, I think they'd say that God hates everybody else, too, other than Muslims, basically.
Become Muslim. And they would teach me that if you've heard of Islam and you haven't converted, then it's, you know, your own responsibility, and you'll go to heaven.
Right.
And so
what happens to the people that don't hear about it, and so they don't convert?
Well, one person did tell me if they've never heard of Islam, then they won't go to hell because they're ignorant. But if you know about it, but she said most of the world's heard of Islam, but, you know, now with so most people know. But that was also her interpretation. I'm sure a lot of, you know, mostly most Muslims would say that everybody's kafir, which means a non-believer, and non-believers will all go to hell. That you have to be a Muslim.
Right, exactly.
A lot of people, you know, they just think Islam is like any other religion, you know, any other kind of religion, that it's just a belief system, and it's just, like I said, you know, belief in God. But it's a whole ideology that wants to take over the whole world. I mean, that's like my friends would say, pretty soon the whole world will be all Islam, you know, be all Muslim. But, that's a lot. And so it's a whole brainwashing system. So, yeah.
So you just got gradually more aware, I guess, as time went on, right?
Well, eventually, it took me a long time, though. I was in Turkey for about 7 years, six years. And then, you know, I eventually, what happened was my daughters, I sent them back to America to somebody that was, I thought of her as a friend, but now I, you know, she did the right thing.
Mm-hmm.
But I sent them back to her, and, well, the husband at the time took them. I was desperate. We were getting severely abused, the girls, and it was just, you know, horrendous situation, and, they weren't in school. They stayed out of school for a year. So she said that, you know, her husband would take him for a while. And I thought, well, I can't think. You know, I was very trauma bonded to my husband. And I felt like I couldn't get away from him. I just felt like, you know, if I go back, I'm not going to be able to take care of my kids. Now I wish I would have gone back. But I sent them back. They flew away on a plane. And you know, I couldn't tell my husband, because even though they weren't his kids, these were my daughters from a, you know, previous relationship. He still was very possessive of them, and he thought of them as his. And so, but we just left without telling him. And then, you know, there was somebody that I didn't, we met in a big, larger city in Turkey, and also, you know, Muslim friends that I had that I thought that I could trust, they actually called my husband.
Huh.
they told him that we were leaving. And like, that's one thing that I really felt betrayed, but because they knew we were being abused. But within the Islamic community, people often really, they're very misogynistic, the women too. And they look very patriarchal, so they protect the man much more than they would our rights, or that my girls would be. Then they were like calling us, stay, you know, they're going to have an awful life. They don't need, I kept saying my girls need to be educated and they have to get back into school. And they kept saying all they need is their Muslim education. And then
my
husband then called me and yelled. But to make a long story short, I got them out and they were out. And then at least I feel like, you know, I did get them to safety. But it did separate us for a long time. And my husband also too beat me after, you know, for doing that. And it was really, and I guess I was so weakened, I would say. That, you know, I just ended up staying with him for a long time. And then eventually did try to get out, but I couldn't get my daughters back. So I just ended up back with him again.
And so were you staying with other people in Turkey after you sent the daughters back?
No, I was back with my husband because there was this trauma bond. I felt like I couldn't live without him. I mean, a lot of people don't understand that. Like, my daughters really just feel like I chose my husband over them. But the truth was, I think I chose. I mean, for me, it was Islam.
Yeah.
Just, it was more the thing that, you know, if you go back, you could end up in hell if you go back to American society.
Sure.
Say, it's better you stay here, you might end up a non-Muslim, and I really have that fear.
But he must have been not very happy with you for sending them away, though.
Oh, no, like I said, I got beaten and abused horribly. It was one of the worst, you know, beatings, but, and I guess, you know, what happens is you just get, when that starts happening, when you actually become more abused, I already had so much abuse in my life, you just lose your spirit, and you just get beaten down. And I think I was just beaten down to where I stayed with them for a long time. And I think, you know, this happens to a lot of Muslim women converts, and as well as born Muslims, people don't realize that in this ideology, it teaches that a man has full authority over his wife. And many women are suffering, and I mean, feminists don't understand this, but so many women suffer, and girl children under Islam, too. Because oftentimes people were mad at me. They said, well, your girls could have just gotten married. You know, they didn't have an education. They could. My husband would say, you know, if you had just, you wouldn't have been separate from your daughters because, you know, they would have been here. They would have gotten married. And in Muslim women's viewpoint, being married is most important. Although there are, you know, I don't want to say they're not educated Muslim women. They are, but under Sharia law, you have to always, you have to, you're under the authority of a man, whether it's a brother, husband, or father.
Yeah, exactly.
I know I'm going into so much detail here. But anyway, that was like really traumatic, the separation from my daughters and myself. But I ended up moving then to Pakistan. I had another Muslim woman friend who was a convert, and she said, we'll get you out of that situation. I know a great man in Pakistan. He's, you know, I don't know. You see, this is what I don't understand is the stupidity within myself. But, I mean, I do. I guess it's just, you know, like I felt like I didn't want to ever go back to a Western culture. I was so brainwashed that I thought I needed to stay within Islam. So to make me, I ended up going to Pakistan, marrying somebody, and then, like, he was just more of a very, like, a psychopathic person that was just trying to use me for my visa, I mean, and money.
The great man that you were going to see.
Yeah, it ended up, it was just, and so it's, I just, what happened was, finally, you know, I woke up to my senses. I mean, I was still a Muslim, but I just realized how dangerous this person was. And I worked a lot. I worked at a Muslim school, Al Huda International, while I was in Pakistan. But finally, I just said, this man is going to, you know, he just wants citizenship. So I was able just to finally, I just woke up. But I was still under, I mean, I was still thinking, you know, at that time, I hadn't left Islam, so I got myself back to the States. I was able to, you know, just tell him that I would, you know, go back to America and then bring him back. I had to use a ruse because otherwise he would have never let me go.
Well, you were lucky that you could access the money to go, too. I mean, what would have happened if there was no money?
That well, I mean, I did
difficult.
A clergy. You know, I was lucky enough to have somebody to help me.
Okay.
And was saved, you know, some, you know, but, and when that was the story, I came back, I got help from a domestic violence program. And, came back.
So when you came back to America, were you still Muslim at that point? Were you still in?
I was very much a practicing Muslim. My excuse was always with that you know, the relationship with, you know, the marriage that the husband that I had too also wasn't practicing. So it was always, it's not as
right, right.
That I saw about the Pakistani women were treated horribly. And, you know, women, I mean, I had friends, and a friend in Pakistan was miserable because just the things that Western women take for granted, things like, you know, when she was, a friend of mine was going through a difficult time, and she would say, like, we can't even go take a drive to the mountains, otherwise, you know, as a woman, she would get in trouble. You can't just go, because women, you know, are not allowed to go anywhere, so.
Right, right, right.
But I was still very practicing, and I wore a hijab, and it took me a couple of years. Yeah, that was 2 years that I was I really didn't get the support I needed, because the organization was like an Indian Pakistan organization where they help women that are in abuse. But the wonderful thing is they did give me an apartment to start out until I got a job, and I could bring my pets back because I had 2 cats, and so I.
And that was back in the U.S., right?
This was in the U.S., but it was just, they just kind of left you. It was, there was no support, and they would kind of be very controlling. They would control the other women that stayed there.
Right.
So I just think that I needed more support after all that. But, you know, there were good things, and I joined a mosque when I came back, and I was still really strongly practicing.
Yeah.
But then, I even almost went to Saudi Arabia. I mean, that's how strong it is when you become a Muslim to want to be a part of this Muslim. Because they teach you that you can't really live a life in a Western society.
Right. Well, and you're not supposed to be friends with any non-Muslims either.
Yeah. I mean, they teach you that you're supposed to be nice to non-Muslims, but there's, you know, say in the Quran and the Hadith, it talks about how you should never have friends. If you have a choice of Muslims and non-Muslims, you cannot have. You shouldn't have non-Muslim friends. And even we had a you know, Quran group, which we'd have every Sunday, and I'd meet with the women. And mm-hmm. They would talk about, you know, even this one woman would say, you know, that we would read about how the Jews and the Christians always they want to turn you away from Islam. They want to make you like themselves. She
yeah.
would say it's true. It's really true that her experience was, you know, being around Jewish people, but they really did want to take you away from the Islamic faith, and they don't want to see you progress, and you're always having to fight this. They would teach, I remember sitting, that was the first, there were many times when I would think, this is, how can I believe this? This is so simplistic. Like, they would talk, especially about stoning women to death. I mean, there's hadith in the Quran, in authentic hadith for Bukhari, that talks about if a woman is caught, a married woman is caught in adultery, that, you know, she'd be stoned to death. I mean, it's very barbaric. And oftentimes women in the group would say, like, with this, you have to have 4 witnesses, we'll discuss it. It can't happen, and there's no way
that
we're going to be 4 witnesses, but the truth is that a lot of women are in jail because if they're raped, they can't find 4 witnesses. It works against them.
Yeah, so, exactly, and it's probably their fault.
Right, so they end up in jail for them, and it's so, you know, I'm slowly waking up to these things, and then I guess what happened was then I was going to move to Saudi Arabia, actually. A friend of mine, a Muslim convert, who had just she'd just come back from Saudi Arabia, and she lived there for quite a long time, had told me that I could go live in her house for a while. And so I was planning to do that, but then something hit, you know, my intuition was saying, don't do this, this is really going to be bad. And I guess it's the first time that I started listening to it. I mean, it's obvious to other people that this could be dangerous, you know, it's plain, you know, obvious, but I mean, it may sound simplistic, but for me, being abused as a child, I kind of learned to shut off everything and not listen to my perceptions, because when I was being abused as a child, I was told this isn't happening. So I think people that haven't been abused wouldn't really understand that. But for me, then I guess it was just, it was just listen to your intuition. You can trust yourself. And
yeah.
So I decided not to go, but then I went to a city and decided to, I lived closer to the spring. And then went to kind of a retreat place where they rented like hotel apartments out. And it was actually like a retreat, because I could say that it gave me so much time to reflect living there. I mean, it was an apartment, so I was having to, try to get a job there and work. But through contact with this friend, I slowly started to just see, religion and ideology really am I following? And I just started to question within. And I guess just certain things, like when I was going to go to Saudi Arabia, I was told that I couldn't give my will to my children because they were non-Muslims by that time. They had left, and I couldn't give them my inheritance, and that I would have to give it over to charity. And there was just something in that that just really made me see it. But how can this be that I can't give this to my own children? I mean, my own money.
Right.
And then I'd seen certain friends, converts too, who also disowned their own children just because they weren't Muslims, and that they wrote them out of inheritance.
Yeah.
Just the cruelty of it. And also a person that was a friend of mine when I was younger, I realized too, she said, she had said, I'm so glad you're okay. I thought maybe, was really worried about you. I thought maybe, she told me she had watched a movie, Stoning of Sarai. And she said, I thought something like that could happen to you. And then that, I watched that movie, and then I started reading the hadiths about stoning people.
Yeah.
And I just said, this couldn't be, and I talked to my Muslim friend who was also a convert, and she would say, well, everything, this Islam is superior. If the law says, there's stonings, there's a reason for it. And I just said, that's not good enough.
So, right. That was a common belief in a lot of religions, and it's in the Bible too, and especially this big thing about stoning women or anybody caught in adultery I guess modern Muslim countries, some of them are still doing it, but it's been a belief long before Islam even started. It's pretty strange, and people actually get into it. It's amazing.
Yeah, I mean, I know in the Jewish faith, because when I listen to Torah readings, it's really horrifying to read but, you read in that that they did stone women.
Yeah, they stoned people for having the wrong religion. They called it worshiping false gods, right?
Yeah, but I don't mean to interrupt. Sorry.
No, that's okay.
Is that that Judaism has been reformed, Christianity has been reformed. You don't read everything literal. When I go into if I go to a synagogue, I'm not afraid they're going to stone me to death.
No, it's not a popular thing anymore.
Right, but with Islam, they follow that in countries. They believe that the 7th century is it's applicable to the 21st century. And even a friend of mine who was a convert would say that Islam is for all times, all places, people. So.
And it's already perfect. So it's not very susceptible to reforming from that point of view.
Yeah. So, I mean, it took me a couple, it was about a year and a half ago. It took a while for me to, at first I was terrified of hell. So I really have been pretty brainwashed. Now when I look at it, it seems ludicrous, because I believe that if there, you know, I believe if there is a higher being, that being would be loving and they wouldn't, you know, and very forgiving. So I can't believe in a great spirit like that. And my friend would tell me, she would say that anything that is really true and good is out of love. And that really woke me up, just that. Like, this is horrible, you know, this is not the idea to teach us to hate other people. And,
right. Yeah, that's a huge change if you realize that all the higher stuff comes from unconditional love. That's a big change.
Yeah, and slowly I think when I realized that, you know, I didn't have to fear hell, and I slowly just kept seeing more of the truth. And just, I was lucky because when I did move to this community, I didn't belong to a mosque or anything, so it was really a good place to become, yeah, to leave the religion. And then I just stopped talking to this friend. I just said that I didn't, you know, and to the people that I did know. Because I knew once somebody becomes an apostate in Islam, they're not regarded the same. And even the friend would say, people would say, it doesn't matter. The truth is, look at you completely different.
Yeah, I can imagine, because apostates are some of the worst categories of people, right, from the Muslim point of view.
Apostates, the penalty for apostasy is death in execution.
Yeah, exactly.
So, and especially what I was told to a friend of mine, and I would talk to my Muslim friend about that, who was a convert, I would say, well, how can any religion won't allow a person to leave, can't be true? And she would say, well, people can leave Islam. It's not true that they're all, you know, that people are dying. She said she'd never heard of people being executed, which is naive.
But
she said what they can't do is speak out against it. If what happens is, you know, that she said that then you know, causes problems within the community. And it takes away faith, and it's more that people will be executed if they speak out against it. And I would say, well, people, we're in a free country in America. We should be able to speak out against any ideology or religion. We can say that's to me not a true religion if you can't speak out against it. If it doesn't have any backbone or strength, it can stand up to criticism.
So what was the response when you said that?
She just said that, you know, well, the Quran is perfect and the Sharia is supreme. Overall, she told me I needed to really study it more to understand the beauty of Sharia, but that Allah is best, and that the Western, the people are like, in the sense she was saying, you know, they don't, they're like lower than animals, and that people will do what they want, and that Islam at least gives some control in a society where people are just going to run rampantly doing, you know, whatever they want that pleases them.
Yeah.
And it just didn't make sense to me. I realized that she was brainwashed.
Yeah.
As well. And, you know, and
it really brings up an important question, because freedom of religion and belief is really important. But what happens when a religion believes that everybody else has to die? You know, it's not just freedom of religion. It gets more complicated, because it's like a basic idea is that you should be free to do anything you want as long as you're not out to hurt other people or disrespect their freedoms. And when you do, I mean, I don't think that issue has really been addressed in most of the Western world. And it can be dangerous for society to say, it's like saying, you know, gangs are free to believe that they have to kill everybody outside of their gang, because it's just their belief. There has to be some more perception, like you said, and common sense involved in it at some point.
Yeah, because that's hard, you know, with freedom of speech, we're so, in so many societies, you know, like, people can't speak out there. They can't speak out against Islam. They can't. You can't become a non-Muslim here, at least. I mean, there's a lot of social problems in this culture and things that are wrong, and, you know, bad things is going on, but it made me really value freedom as well, the freedom to just say what I see and perceive about a religion. And
yeah.
That people, that's what I want to say, is that anybody thinking to convert to Islam, you know, study it, don't jump into it quickly, because a lot of times they really try to get you in. Muslims will try to influence you to become a Muslim because they'll often scare you about the hell, that you go to hell. But to do, if I could prevent, I was separated from my daughters, but I would hope that I could prevent any, people, vulnerable women that have children, into don't ever go to a Muslim country, really study it. And because, you can, there's anything that is divine is based upon love, not out of control. Islam is an ideology. We fought so hard, to gain women's rights. And it's not to say women aren't abused in Muslim societies, they are, but at least we have the right. There's shelters, and it's considered a criminal offense.
Yeah.
But it's not in Islam, it's going back into Sparbera, a lot of the law, under Sharia.
What do you think is going on with the so-called feminist movement in the West now, that they think Islam is like one of the best cultures for women? Does it really promote it?
It was quite a shock for me, because when I first started doing, I call it de-radicalizing, because I felt like I was radicalized by Islam. When I seen the truth that this is a horrible ideology, I really thought that feminist people would be protective. I thought I had a community to go to. It was just a shock to see that they were standing up for Islam and marching for Islam. I had to read a lot of books to understand that the left, far left, I'm not talking, and I don't really consider myself right or left. I have, right views. I have different views, but I would never consider myself, I'm not on the left anymore. Far left, I couldn't believe how the left supports Islam, and this, ideology that is so horrific to women.
Right.
With stoning and genital mutilation. I mean, everything, they don't stand up for those women. They don't stand up for Muslim women, because it's all because we've been taught about cultural relativism, which I, in college too, I remember taking courses about all cultures are equal, but the truth is they're not. All cultures are not equal, and I don't know, it's just, I was really disappointed by the feminist movement, and just different people, even my own friends would say, you're just, like my one friend, I consider him, even, as a man, he's a feminist, but he would say, you just had a really bad interpretation of Islam.
That's not really what it's like, right?
Right, he would just say, can it be reformed? And after a while, I told him that it couldn't be, but he still doesn't understand, and oftentimes is just very, very shocked in a sense that the way, that I left is, that, that I,
yeah.
that I couldn't, he thought that I could just think of Islam in a different way, more reform, more progressive, but that's just, and also he would say things like, maybe Muslims will learn that we don't kill apostates in Western societies. We don't do that here. It's very, but it's a very insulated view.
You were saying the reason that you were attracted to it in the beginning is because you were kind of out of touch with yourself, and you weren't listening to your intuition, and were punishing yourself on subconscious levels, and all these things were going on psychologically that made you not able to really look at it clearly. So if you use that understanding to see why millions of people don't look at it clearly either, like what you're talking about, you can kind of see a pattern psychologically that you get certain emotional blind spots and bad feelings about yourself, and somehow the result is your clarity is gone, and you don't have your common sense, or you don't trust your inner guidance or anything like that. And it seems like huge numbers of people are in that situation right now. They can't understand.
I think that's the way. And so, yeah, with feminists, I mean, I lived as a Muslim for almost like 10 years.
Yeah.
So, if I could just explain to them that women don't have rights, and that it is a very anti-feminist religion, and women were going back, years to where women were just basically slaves, and their only purpose is to serve the husband. And that all whites, all women, and all girls should have rights, and Muslim women in Muslim countries. We should, as feminists, they should be fighting against Sharia law. It's really wrong to let little girls be mutilated, and to just say, well, that's just cultural relativism. It just really angers me. But with my story, I mean, I can at least say I know. I've studied Islam for a long time.
And
I've lived in two Muslim cultures, and it's just it seems unbelievable that feminists would be protecting and standing with the Islamic ideology.
Yeah, and I don't think you can overlook either that, in a completely different way, the men are victimized too, because they're not allowed to actually have empathy for anybody outside of the Islamic doctrine. They have to be willing to do whatever's necessary to overcome and invade other cultures and kill people that won't convert and things like that. And I don't think that's men's highest potential, to fall into that kind of thing.
Yeah, I mean, from what I've seen with men who've converted, a lot of times, because sometimes they feel like they've lost their role in society, Islam is attractive because they feel that then they can, a lot of men then feel they can have power over their wife. They see that Muslim women, they see how Muslim women are supposed to be obedient. And this is what I saw with converts, too.
Okay.
But even though the lady I knew, her husband was a convert, he became very dominant, and she couldn't do anything without asking him. All her email, I'm going too much into detail, but I think that it is bad, because even my husband, I mean, as much as, it was horrible what he did to us, and I hate that, I hate his behavior, and I hate who he was. I also saw that he had been horribly abused as a child through Islamic teachings, and what he just, in the worldview, because his father was really harsh, those Islamic teachings are really harsh, and so a lot of times men are, they don't grow with empathy in that, and they're taught, you can see that in the callousness in the cultures, you can just see that because a lot of children get beaten by the time they're sick. By the time your parents are supposed to beat their child by 7 years of age if they don't pray. So a lot of, I knew people, and even, the man, in Pakistan, I could tell that, he lost his empathy because of the horrible things that he would see. Like halal slaughter, too, is just, it's cruel. The children actually, the animals are slaughtered right in front of them. At an age when they just can't understand that, they can't, psychologically speaking.
And also,
I could see that he became more sociopathic because he lost that. And that's not, I don't make excuses, because for that, but for somebody becoming, having no empathy, or for abuse. But I could see that, this person had been beaten so much, and you were being abused. And I'm not to say that, I was abused. My parents weren't Muslim. It's not to say that, that other people, there's abuse everywhere. But I just believe that Islam, the ideology, we shouldn't be bringing in any kind of ideology that is abusive to people or oppressive towards girls and women.
Right.
And I said, if anybody is thinking to take their children to a Muslim country, don't. You know, it's just, if I could protect other girls from what happened with my own daughters, because I can't really change the past with that. But just look within yourself and you can find the spirit in God. You don't need to find it in Islam. And like I said, anything that controls the person is a cult. That tries to have power over people and control their minds and how they think is a cult. And you can always find the spirit. I'm more agnostic now, but I do believe in it, a spiritual, life, but it's good and loving. All people, are value and every person is sacred, and Islam does not teach that.
Have you been able to communicate with all this in the process of recovery with your daughters, so that there's some kind of mutual understanding that you weren't trying to abandon them or anything like that? You were trying to save them.
So my one, they really do believe that, it's hard to talk to them. My younger daughter and I we've been able to form a good relationship, and she forgives me for what happened, and, she understands where I came from.
Right.
That's been I'm really thankful for that relationship, and we see each other and visit. So, I try to explain everything to her, and I do writing too, and I'm trying to write a book about it.
Right. So it seems like now the big thing is to not continue the past and be able to somehow start fresh in the spirit that you want to. As if none of that had happened, what would you like to have your life like now? Are you able to kind of move toward that at this point?
I am. I mean, there's a lot of grief. Some days are really difficult because I did lose the relationship with my older daughter, and we don't talk much. There's a deep pain in that, and it's really difficult because it was really traumatic.
Right.
At the time, I was so trauma bonded to my husband that I couldn't get away, but later when I did get out of it, it was really just that loss of your own children is the most horrible loss. Obviously they're alive and doing well, and they're doing pretty good. It's just also the sad thing that they also then got re-abused in a different way. It's hard to live with that. But I feel like that. I've been trying to make amends. I have made amends to them, and I've tried to talk to them about it. But some things that are lost can. It's really when things happen, it's very hard to. It's just people can't get over things, and they shouldn't. Trauma is very painful, and it's a lot long lasting. But I have been after I left Islam, I was able to play music again.
Okay, good.
Music is healing. I play guitar, and I'm
good.
Yeah, working also towards a degree. I finished my psychology degree when I was overseas. So I'm working at getting a master's degree in counseling. So maybe I can help out survivors of abuse.
Right.
And also to keep repairing my relationship with my children.
Yeah.
It's hard to leave behind, but a lot of writing helps me.
Right. And it seems like the more you get healed, the better chance you've got at the relationships getting better, too.
Yeah. I mean, the one thing that I would teach other people is always listen to your intuition.
Yes.
That's one thing. And it's guided me towards really wonderful decisions and leading me towards the right path, and I always listen to it. And I trust myself. I trust, my life. And I also believe, even though I'm working on it, I, believe that I'm a worthy, valuable person.
It's what was good.
And I am feeling it from the heart to where I protect myself from any kind of abuse.
Right.
I've also had to really leave a lot of friendships behind that I realized were abusive or just, it's like repetition of my own childhood, and I didn't really understand how unconsciously that was replaying. So now, very, very selective in my friendships, and I guess just, I just want to educate people about Islam. and about the dangers of it in entering our Western societies, to enter, just...
So if somebody is in that situation and they want to actually try to communicate with you, is there a way to do that?
Yeah, they can find me on Twitter, but I'm under Rachela Levin on Twitter, and also I have a website where I'm doing writing. It's Phoenix Rising, ex-Muslim, WordPress.com.
Okay, so that's an actual site. It's not an email address, right?
No, but they can get hold of me on Twitter.
And okay.
They could actually write to, Rachela Levin @gmail.com.
Okay, that's great.
So they can get a hold of me there.
Because I would think it would be nice for somebody to have a voice of experience when they're in the middle of trying to make sense of all that kind of stuff.
Yeah, I would love, I'd be willing to talk to anybody who needs somebody to talk to who might be alone. And like in the situation I was in, I wish I would have had somebody that supported me, because the people that I did know mostly were very, it was just more judgmental and looking down on me.
Yeah.
And I didn't feel cared about. And I think that if I could help somebody or educate them more about what is on me, is just if someone wanted to talk about it, I'd be open.
Yeah, exactly. And are you writing articles or blog posts or things on the WordPress site?
Right now I'm writing a blog post, and then I'm also trying to work on a book about my experiences as a Muslim and living in Turkey.
That would be great.
I'd like to get a book out here.
Okay. Well, yeah, I think it's a great resource that you're offering people to communicate with you, and could save people from a lot of unpleasant experience if they will take advantage of it. So that sounds great.
Yeah, because a lot of women are converting from America or Western societies. And I mean, I've even known some women that because they were trapped over in Islamic countries. I was very fortunate in that Turkey is not a Sharia state, and so I could leave on my own.
Oh, okay.
Coalition, but I know people that actually can't leave because they've had kids with the Muslim husband, and they're trapped over there.
Yeah.
Very dangerous.
Yeah. Well, as long as the internet's working, then you can kind of be a resource for a lot of those people, it seems like.
Yes.
Okay. Well, any last... points that you'd like to leave with people after the whole discussion, what you want them to carry with them most?
Well, mostly I think for feminists too, I think that if we're really feminists, that we protect all women and girls from all these horrific Sharia laws of stoning, and to really look at the truth, and so we can protect our societies, become aware. And I guess I would just say too, don't convert to Islam. It's really a dangerous ideology. It's really scary the way, before I left, when I became a Muslim, people were much more cautious of it. And then when I came back, everybody was open to it. So it was a completely different culture. I mean, in our Western free culture, but too.
Right.
We can't, but many, civilizations have been colonized by Islam, and really do your research about it, because the West is heading towards the same direction. I mean, it can happen, that an Islamic state, Islam could conquer the West, because too many people are asleep and they don't read the Quran, really study it, and look in depth at what Sharia societies and what girls and women go through.
Yeah.
See what it's really.
I would think that, personally, I would suggest everybody reads all three of the Islamic scriptures. And, just because you're not converting doesn't mean you don't want to be aware and educated. And I would suggest people learn about it, too. I think it would be a good idea and help with judgment when decisions come up.
Yeah, I think people should read it too, because a lot of people really think that it's just a religion of peace, but it's not.
Yeah.
It's a religion of a submission and being a slave.
Yeah, and also conquering, like you were saying, that the West could easily become totally Muslim as well. It doesn't mean that everybody decides they want to. It's that at some point you're given a free choice, convert, or if you prefer to die, that would be fine too. And that has happened in a lot of countries up to now, right?
It has. If you really research and read back, in many Islamic societies were once Christian societies, but they were converted. Right. So it's really important to do your research and become aware and awake and really understand it.
Yeah. Yeah, and I think you can see it in America right now, because it's not just jihad. It's a political takeover as well. And the beginnings of it are already happening in this country. Certainly in the UK, probably more than America, but America quite a bit as well. And it's hard for people to realize that, I think.
Yeah, I mean, to me, it's terrifying when I just came from countries that were Islamic. Well, I mean, they were secular, but they still, they were Muslim cultures.
Uh-huh.
See them back, becoming, seeing it everywhere here, it's really scary, and that people are so unaware of it. So I guess that's what I would say, is to read all through the Quran, the Hadith, and the Surah.
Yeah.
But it is, because it is coming on to sight, it's being accepted, and it's a race, and it's not a race, it's an ideology that's similar to communism.
Yeah, in many ways, that's true. And communism is being promoted by a lot of the young people in America now, too.
Mm-hmm.
I mean,
maybe that's why they join together, because they know that Islam can take down the...
Yeah, it's quite possible. Yeah. And I would also say, in case you agree with it, that Bill, who recommended that we talk, has written a lot of good books for people that don't want to read thousands of pages of really difficult text, where he's organized the quotes from all three scriptures and made them really accessible to everybody on politicalislam.com. I think that's a good resource as well.
Yeah, his lectures are good too. Because he explains in a simpler way, because reading, sometimes people don't have the time to go through the whole Quran or the Hadith.
Yeah.
He has books that fully explain that, that would be really good for people to look at.
Has he been banned off social media? I don't know. Is it just on his website now?
Well, I know he's on Twitter. I don't know. I haven't seen a lot of his videos lately. And he's also on YouTube.
Oh, is he? Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. So, yeah, really good thing for an educational resource, I think.
It is. Yeah, he is.
Oh. Okay. Well, it would be nice to stay in touch as you progress, because I think you're going to be helping a lot of people. And... anything that you want to write and have us post, we can do that too. And, just want to be as supportive as possible. I think, like women and men both, to find out they're actually humans. They don't have to form themselves to a particular belief and hate everybody else. That's not really necessary. And you're kind of being a great example for everybody in that. So I appreciate it.
Yeah, there's so much. I mean, it's so complex that... there's so much to discuss, so it'd be good to talk again.
Yeah. Life on this planet could be a really different experience if people would just respect and be nice to each other. That would be a huge advance.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. It's if people could just really look at each other and as, with equity and love.
Yeah. It's really pretty simple.
And that, people can be of different religions and different faiths, and that's beautiful. People don't have to think the same way. But that's what Islam teaches, is that there's only one religion, and this is it, and people don't realize that. But if that were to take over our societies, we wouldn't have any rights. Awareness is so important, to be aware and to be conscious.
Yeah. Self-respect helps a lot, too. Because that makes you listen to your own intuition and guidance, right?
Yeah, and self-love. I mean, I don't mean it in a, over. I mean, I just mean respecting your own self, because that's when, as I said, that if you don't, a lot of when you really hate yourself within, then you're more vulnerable to these kinds of, belief systems.
Yeah, you're basically going to live up to whatever you feel you are.
Yeah.
Might as well see the best in yourself and watch the good results from that.
Mm-hmm. Yes. Yeah. Yeah, because it starts from within, isn't it? Yeah.
Okay, well, all Donna will say goodbye during the break, Raquel. That was great, and I really appreciate your sharing all that with us. Thank you.
Okay, I'm glad I could come in.
Me too. Okay, guys, there goes Raquel Levine. I thought she was did a great job, and it was very courageous to tell her story in as much detail and depth as she did. It should help a lot of people who are right on the edge of looking at those same issues that she was got caught up in, and how to make decisions about where you want to go with your life and belief systems that you're thinking about taking on for a sense of security and meaning in life, and, you know, especially for younger people, but people of any age, really. Because what it seems like to me is that we're, no matter what age you supposedly are, we're all just, you know, trying to figure out the basics of life and use the time as well as we can. And people like her are doing a great job. It's not about, you know, that if you have a good life, that means you never make mistakes. I haven't met anybody like that in person yet. And I don't think it's necessary, because the thing about mistakes is if you learn from them and then correct them, then they become valuable and they create what's called wisdom and experience. And that's really valuable. It's expensive because, you know, usually you have to suffer through the results of mistakes that we make ourselves, but at the end of it, you can make better choices for yourself and also help other people, not just by stuff you've memorized, but say, look, this is what happened to me, and you could do it this other way and not have to make all the same mistakes as I did. And that could be really valuable. And Raquel was saying that she wishes that she had run into somebody like that for herself. But I'm hoping that her words of sharing her life experience will really help people getting insight into their own intuition and inner guidance. And, you know, really, like they said in Ghostbusters, important safety tip, don't hate yourself. Don't think that you're a terrible person, because that's not virtuous. It just, what it does is it sets you up to repeat the same thing over and over, and often worse and worse, and you really don't want to do that. So don't condemn yourself. And if you want to be of use to other people in the world and the rest of your life, you can't hate yourself and love them. It doesn't work that way. You've got to, if you want to love everybody, that includes you. And that's what Raquel is demonstrating, learning to do. I thought it was great. She's also finding out that everybody's got a direct connection to God, to the source inside you. You don't need to memorize which groups God hates or anything like that. You've got a connection to something amazing that you came from, and that can let you know which things feel like they're right and which ones don't. That develops with practice, I think. And she's demonstrating that no matter what mistakes you might make that hurt yourself and hurt people you care about, you don't have to keep doing it. You know, that's the silver lining in that whole difficult situation, is that anytime you want, you can look inside yourself and see where you're condemning yourself, and just, you know, talk to your mind and decide that probably would be better not to do anymore. And if you really do that, you don't have to analyze it so much. You just stop, and it really is possible. So I'm grateful for her to come on the show. And the first woman that we've had on the show that converted intentionally to Islam and then came back out of it again. And that's great, valuable sharing of experience. So anyway, I'm really happy that our friend Bill recommended to her that she come on the show, or that gave her the idea. And I think she saw some of the interviews that we did with the other women who were born in the Middle East and were able to change their life situations, and thought, you know, we would really benefit from also hearing with her. That turned out to be true. So that's great. We'll stay in touch with her, and you can keep up with her blog if you want to see what she's writing at Phoenix Rising. Phoenix is Phoenix, R-I-S-I-N-G, xexmuslim dot wordpress.com, and she'll keep putting things up there. And then her Twitter that she told us also is her name, Raquella, Raquella Levin, Levin. That's her Twitter name, her Twitter account. And stay in touch with her that way. I don't know if she's on other video platforms, but that's a start. And if you're watching those, I'm sure it'll refer you to any other place that she posts videos or blogs or things like that. Let's see what else. Remember that we have Saturday shows now that we're running Lost Arts Radio live on 4:30 Pacific time, 7:30 Eastern time, Saturday afternoons every week. And those are usually more related to current event type subjects. And sometimes lately we've been having other people come on the shows with us. That's happening again in the near future, I'm sure. And then a half hour after those broadcasts end, which is they end an hour after they start. So the Lost Arts Radio Live ends at 5:30 Pacific, 8:30 Eastern, and then 30 minutes later, we have our private club meeting where we're on a mutually supportive forum with a little bit more resistance against censorship, and we can talk about things freely there with a little bit more relaxed atmosphere, health issues, consciousness issues, world events, anything you want to talk about that affects your life, and the small dues to that group, which I hope you consider joining, that supports our whole operation here. We're not doing commercials or pushing products at the moment, because when I recommend a product, I really like to do it because I think it's good and you might like it. And I had some good experience with it. And it's not just because we want the money from the product. And that's not happening right now. I'm not saying it never will in the future, and I'll let you know. But for now, the dues of the Planetary Healing Club support our work. And if you wanted to join that, it's a very valuable private forum that's not being censored. PlanetaryHealingClub.com. And if you have the means to support us, you can see donate buttons on our two websites, which is LostArtsRadio.com and also LostArtsResearchInstitute.org. That's our nonprofit that keeps all this going. They have donate buttons, and we need the resources if you feel like helping us to keep going and eventually building a school if we actually bring in enough funds for that. And then Doug has set up a Subscribestar page, which is just starting. And that's subscribestar.com/LostArtsRadio. And that helps support us as well. You can take a look at that. Also, our channel on Brighteon, which we've been promised will not be censored. And you can subscribe to that channel now. And I recommend you do that before you forget. To stay notified of the shows that we put up and any other videos. That's at Brighteon. That's brighteon.com/channel/LostArtsRadio. And that's up and running right now. We've got a lot of videos posted there. You stay in touch there as well as our main site, LostArtsRadio.com. And any suggestions or questions or comments or show subjects that you want to suggest for us, there are contact forms on those sites, or just email me, richard@lostartsradio.com, and I'll look at all of those. I always do as soon as I can get to them. I think that's about it. I hope you enjoyed the show with Raquella, and we'll keep having the best guests we can possibly get on for everybody's education and inspiration. And I feel real fortunate to be able to talk to these people that I would never get to meet except for our project here. And I'm learning from it at the same time as all of you. So thank you. Thanks for letting us do this. And I hope you have a great week. And we'll look forward to seeing you here next time. Have a good night.
Introducing Lost Arts Radio on Subscribestar.com. Just go to Subscribestar.com/LostArtsRadio to find our rewards program, offering 10 different giving levels starting at just $5 a month. We offer incredible value for any rewards level, from extra monthly interview videos not available publicly to subscription-based Planetary Healing Club videos once, twice, or three times a month, to private counseling sessions with Lost Arts Radio host Richard Sachs, to tech help with me, Doug Diamond. We even have one option where you can be the star on Lost Arts Radio as our guest on a specially produced show just for you. We conduct an interview with you and broadcast it to our growing network and listenership. Our subscribe star levels are one of a kind and offer great rewards for any budget. Please help support Lost Arts Radio. We can't do it without you. With increasing censorship on many of our channels, we really need your support today to keep doing what we're doing. As Richard says, we're not even at survival level yet. Lost Arts Radio has three weekly shows. Lost Arts Radio Live each Saturday night at 7:30 Eastern, 4:30 Pacific, which is a live stream currently on multiple platforms in case we get banned from some of the larger ones. Right now, we're on two YouTube channels, Facebook Live, Periscope, which is Twitter, Twitch, and DLive. You can access these broadcasts by going to www.lostartsradio.com/live for all the links to those channels. The Planetary Healing Club meets right after Lost Arts Radio Live at 9 p.m. Eastern, 6 p.m. Pacific on Saturday nights. And our Sunday show with guests airs at 9 p.m. Eastern, 6 p.m. Pacific on Sunday nights on our Blog Talk Radio channel, our YouTube channels, Facebook pages, and on Brighteon. Be sure to sign up for our free email list just in case we do get banned on big tech's platforms. It's just a matter of time, really. They don't like the stuff we talk about, and they do not want the truth out there. In fact, they have already attacked us numerous times. Join our free email list so we can let you know where we are and how to access our shows. The sign-up button is right on the top right on most pages of our website. The best starting point for all things Lost Arts Radio is our main site, lostartsradio.com, where you can find the hottest news selection videos that we curate just for you. Those are on the homepage and added to daily, as well as articles and breaking news about information you really need to know. Our show archives, the 10 most recent shows, are right on our homepage, as well as our Blog Talk Radio page at blogtalkradio.com/lostartsradio, or just click the All Things Radio Show tab right on our website. We're in the podcast directory on iTunes, and all of our shows except the banned ones are on our YouTube channels at Lost Arts Radio and at Diamond Disc. Our Brighteon page is really taking off, and we often have editor's picks videos right on their homepage. Visit brighteon.com/channel/Lost Arts Radio. On our site, you can also access our free listener forum as well as sign up for the Planetary Healing Club, which is just $25 a month, where you get private access to a one-on-one interaction with host Richard Sachs and myself and the other club members who participate live. More info can be found at planetaryhealingclub.com. We're providing solutions in there to make the world a better place. Come join us. Stay tuned, because up next, you'll get to hear a really great song by an independent artist that we're doing our best to support. Go to lostartsradio.com/music for the full list of all the great songs and bands that we spin on our audio-only podcast shows. If you're in a band and want to submit a song for consideration for airplay on Lost Arts Radio, visit my website at diamonddiscaudio.com for more information about the music placement, mastering, and mixing work that I do. Thanks again for listening to and supporting Lost Arts Radio. We love having you as part of our family to learn, experience, and grow with.
The most wonderful things seem just out of your reach. Faces and places seem strange and they unsteady your feet. You lay your head down thinking nobody cares. You look around thinking nobody's there. I am.
roots are stronger than you think. I'll help you weather the storm. It's all right.